This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Oru Kayak. They design folding kayaks that can go virtually anywhere, thanks to their lightweight and folding design. Stay tuned for later in the episode. We talk with Stephanie Wright, a member of the She Explores team, about how the Oru Kayak helps her merge her city life with her outdoor life. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
An ode to every woman who's ever been called outdoorsy. You, a natural resource. You who feels like the best version of herself at sunset when the air is crackling and the dirt's between your toes. You who, as the sun's rising, promises to be quiet and let the dawn share its secret with the day on its own. You who at high noon have almost but not quite dared the sun to burn your skin, imagining the cracked patina leather it would someday become, signs of a life outside. But you know better than to dare the sun anything. You who have pulled on crusty socks unceremoniously and brushed off those who notice. You who know that all the bruises and scrapes from scrambling and rambling are the best because they remind you of being alive. Someone may even point it out. How'd you do that? And you shrug your shoulders because you honestly don't know. You who have shed tears on the trail without really knowing why. You who look at the mountains and think they must know everything about you. And you who look at the sea and are sure that it doesn't care about you at all. You who have surprised yourself by falling behind the group. And you who have surprised yourself by charging ahead. The trail is the same, but each time you're the one who's different. You who, however gracefully, made it. Sometimes it's ugly and sometimes you move across water or rock and have never felt lighter. You who smiles as someone tries to understand why you have to be barefoot at least some portion of the year, or come in with rosy cheeks and wild hair and dirt clinging in clumps to, well, anywhere it can get. And you who don't really need them to understand anyways. You who have found your remedy, you lucky girl. It takes some years to know about the cure-all of dried sweat and moon stains. You, a natural resource, supplied by nature and made up of it too. I'm proud of you.
That was Madison Perrins reading her ode to every woman who's ever been called outdoorsy. I thought you would appreciate it. You can read it for yourself on she-explores.com and also see the beautiful photos Madison chose to complement the piece with. This episode is all about activist and entrepreneur Shelma Jun, the founder of Flash Foxy, an online community for women climbers, and the now biannual Women's Climbing Festival. Shelma was gracious enough to talk with me late on a Friday afternoon from Washington, D.C.
I'm okay. I'm a little hectic. I mean, it's just kind of a busy time for me right now because I was here lobbying for Access Fund and American Alpine Club, and I leave for Korea tomorrow. So a little crazy, but it's exciting. It's like that thing where it's crazy, but it's because you're doing lots of exciting stuff.
Shelma's totally doing a lot of exciting stuff. Since she founded Flash Foxy in 2014, Shelma has become a leader in the climbing community. She's graced the cover of Climbing Magazine and has been found on the pages of Outside Magazine. And she was recently the focus of a short film called Within Reach. This newfound leadership is a role that Shelma takes seriously. I think you'll find from our conversation that Shelma is deliberate with her business model and very conscious of the impact that Flash Foxy, the Climbing Festival, and her latest venture, the Never Not Collective, all have on women, public land, and the industry at large. Shelma got involved uniting women in the climbing community, and it's had a ripple effect. She believes you can do the same in your own community too, but more on that later.
I was born in Seoul, Korea, but my family moved to the States when I was 5, and we moved to Southern California. I grew up just south of LA. The outdoors have always been a really large part of my life. My family was always really into camping. My parents had brought all this camping equipment with them from Korea when we moved here. And so we had this crazy U-shaped tent that was really funny looking, but we would set it up in the backyard all the time and sleep in the backyard. most of our vacations were camping trips. I grew up kind of poor, so we didn't really have money to go fly anywhere or go on any big trips. So a lot of our trips focused around camping. And luckily in California, there's just such a bounty of beautiful places to go and explore the natural outdoors. So it doesn't really feel like you're settling. It feels really magical and fun, especially when you're younger and you're a child. And so we spent a lot of time exploring a lot of the state and national parks in California. So the outdoors have always been kind of a large part of my life. And there was definitely a moment where I was more into traditional sports. I swam competitively and I played water polo and I surfed a lot because I grew up somewhat close to the ocean. And then I ended up being back in the mountains near the end of high school when I got really into snowboarding.
Oh, that's awesome. I think it's great that your parents brought that love with them from Korea. I've heard that Korea has amazing mountains and a great culture for hiking, especially.
Yeah, people are really into hiking there, especially the older generation. Actually, my mom, we were in Korea like 7 years ago, and she made this joke about, you're more likely to run into a friend on the mountain than the department store, because everybody's up there all the time.
Shelma identified as a tomboy growing up, but in a lot of ways, it was a label that she bristled against.
There was this social pressure. There were very specific characteristics associated with these labels for young girls. You were either a girly girl, and that meant this. It meant that you liked dresses and you liked putting on makeup and playing with dolls and staying inside and drinking tea or whatever, right? That you didn't like getting dirty and you didn't really like exercising. There's this very specific stereotype. And on the other end, there was this other stereotype that if you were a tomboy, you kind of had to snub your nose at that. You didn't like all those things. It meant that you wanted to be this complete opposite of it, that you wanted to be outside and get dirty and wear boys' clothes, and you hated dolls and you hated being inside. And I think that there were these two extremes, and you felt this pressure to identify with one or the other. And I think that society also fostered this competitiveness or disconnect between these types of women or girls, and that if you were one, the other couldn't relate to you and you couldn't relate to the other.
So, Shelma felt this culturally constructed division as a child, and it affected her relationships with other women and what she thought of as feminine. Meanwhile, she got into high-impact sports. She didn't find climbing until later.
I guess I've always seen that there's climbing around, but it didn't quite interest me. I was quite obsessed with surfing and with snowboarding and downhill mountain biking. And in 2008, I had shoulder reconstruction surgery on my right shoulder. And there was some quite extensive work done on it. They had to do a bone graft, there was a lot of ligament and tendon repair. And I had to sleep sitting up for 2 months. So it was a pretty intense surgery. And my doctor told me that I couldn't do any sports where I might fall and impact that shoulder for at least 2 years, or there was a very high risk of re-injuring my shoulder. The recovery was so incredibly painful. I had no plan to hopefully ever have to do that surgery again. So I found myself a little despondent, because all these sports that I like to do are pretty high impact sports, such as downhill mountain biking or snowboarding. I wasn't quite sure how to move forward from there, and I had a girlfriend who suggested that I go to the rock climbing gym with her and top rope. When you're on a top rope at the gym, if you fall, you're gonna fall 1 inch on a stretchy rope, and that there's no impact. And so I went and checked it out, and I really liked it. Started climbing very casually, but immediately after that, I moved down to Los Angeles to go to grad school and get my master's in urban planning. And so I got quite busy. I climbed occasionally, but I wouldn't have identified as a climber.
That changed when Shelma moved to New York City in 2011, made her first climbing friend, and went track climbing outside for the very first time.
I was able to go on a three-pitch climb. and it was just a three-pitch, beautiful three-star classic. And I was hooked. I mean, there's so many things about climbing that appeal to me. I think that the movement is so beautiful. It really feels so natural. And you get the places that it takes you to be up on a wall so high, the exposure, the views, the challenges of climbing, the fact that there are ways to progress, but you can really track that progress on a personal level. And the community is amazing. The New York climbing community is just really special. It's welcoming, it's open, it's diverse. There's a lot of people of color. There's a lot of queer folks. There's a large adaptive climbing scene and community in New York City. And on top of that, you just have a wide variety of the types of work that people do. You have people who are servers or work at the gym. I had friends who are fashion designers or work in banking or tech or are actors and work in theater. I mean, there's such a wide variety of people's interests, and we're all brought together by climbing, and we get to share these other parts of our lives with each other too. So you get exposed to all these really cool things about New York. So it's just a really great community.
What made you start Flash Foxy? I know it started as a social media account, right?
Yeah, it just started out as an Instagram account. And I think that there was definitely a feeling of competitiveness with other women when I was younger, in my early 20s. Definitely feeling when I hung out with predominantly men in these outdoor sports, that there was a competitiveness to prove yourself to the group of guys that you were with, and to prove yourself as being as capable as they are, but also to prove that you were cool and deserve to be there, right? I think that it's definitely a lonely place to be. And as I got older, I really was able to begin to appreciate my relationships with women and the kind of special bond, the special dynamic of support and camaraderie that we're able to have together. And when I got into climbing, there just weren't as many women climbing at that time, and there weren't as many strong women or women who were trad climbing. I think it's so different now in New York. Every time I go to the gym, there's so many strong women, and they're just all crushing, and it's really awesome to see. But at that time, we were all kind of like looking for each other because there just weren't that many of us. I met a couple girls at the gym through some other friends, and they introduced me to some other girls, and there was probably about five or six of us that were all at a similar level, all trad climbing, and all wanting to push ourselves and wanting to climb together. And I really found that my dynamic with these women was different. I felt less social pressure to prove myself. I felt more open and comfortable being vulnerable without appearing weak. I found myself feeling inspired and supported in a different way. And it really deepened my relationship with climbing, and I was psyched. I had spent all fall climbing with these women in the Gunks, and that spring, I just decided to start posting some pictures of us climbing, and that's kind of where it all evolved from.
And so you ended up having other women reaching out to you, wanting to be a part of what you'd started.
We just started getting all these followers, and then I had women reaching out. I think not even being wanting to be a part of what I started, but wanting something like that of their own where they live. Wishing that they had a group of women that they climbed with, wanting to climb at a higher level, but feeling unsure how to get there, wanting to go outside and be climbing, but unsure of how to do that, confessing feelings of climbing with their boyfriend and his friends, and being at a more introductory level and feeling bad when they had to go to places with easier climbs, and wishing that they had a network of people who were more at their level. So, I mean, there was just quite a variety of different types of emails that I would receive.
What started as an online community blossomed when Shelma announced the inaugural Women's Climbing Festival in 2016.
I decided to do it because climbing with women is fun. And I had done a couple trips of probably about 10 to 12 women and had always had a really great time. A lot of women were looking for ways to connect and come together. And I looked, and there really wasn't anything like this happening at that time. I think there are a lot more women-focused events now, but right at that time, there really weren't ones, especially for climbing. So I decided to put one on, and I actually have never even been to a climbing festival. other than the Women's Climbing Festival. But yeah, I just thought this would be really fun, and I really thought it was going to be much smaller. I had anticipated it would be something like 30 of us in the desert hanging out and having a good time. And when I announced it and created the Facebook event and saw that 200, 300 people said that they were coming or wanted to come, I think it was the realization that this was much bigger than what I had anticipated. But the demand and the need was much bigger than I had anticipated.
What was the learning curve like setting up an event like that?
Oh my God, so steep.
We talk about that learning curve, giving back to the community, why it's okay to be sexy and a feminist, and more after a word from our sponsor, Org Kayak. The folks at Org Kayak believe that connecting to nature is a deep human need, even for those of us who live in cities. We talked to Stephanie Wright, a member of the She Explores team, and an all-around great human being, about how the Org Kayak helps her experience nature while living in urban Seattle.
The Org Kayak folds down to the size of a big box. You can store it behind your couch, and then a nice day comes along, or you and your friends want to go out paddling. You can store a few of them, which is really cool. I have a small car because I live in the city, and I could pack two or three of the Org Kayaks in my car, which is much more convenient than having a rack on the top of your car, I think. On New Year's Eve, 2 years ago, we took our Org Kayaks out and set up our kayaks and then paddled out in time to watch the fireworks at midnight. To be able to do something like that without having to have these huge, massive vessels is pretty amazing.
Load up your car and get on the water in a beautiful, foldable Oru kayak. Learn more at www.orukayak.com. That's www.orukayak.com.
I mean, it was 100 times more work than I thought it was going to be.
Back to Shelma. Before the break, we asked her about the learning curve of an event like the Women's Climbing Festival.
No, it was so much work, and there were so many things that I just had never even considered or thought about that I needed to figure out about venues and permits and land manager contacts and all these different costs that I had not ever really thought about that you don't have to think about until you're planning something at kind of a larger scale. But I think I'm really lucky for a couple different reasons. I think one, right when I announced it, a ton of women reached out to me online saying, I have these contacts if you'd like. I'm happy to help. I'm a photographer. I'd like to come and shoot. I work with this media company. We'd love to be involved. And then the second part was that the climbing industry was incredibly supportive. I emailed our sponsor package to a lot of climbing companies, and they responded really positively, and a lot of big companies supported us our first year, which is really, really awesome because they don't know me and this is the very first time we're doing something. So you're really putting trust into something that hasn't been proven. And so I really appreciate the climbing community's support and trust in our vision and our commitment to putting something on that was going to be good.
Were there any reactions to the festival from women who experienced it that surprised you or that really impacted you?
I don't know if one specific person's experience is so surprising. I think what was so surprising is just, I think when you read anything that comes about out of the festival, we're all talking about this energy, this amazing energy of the festival. And that's really what was so surprising, is there is this hum to the entire weekend where we're almost drunk with giddiness of being there together. Everybody is so generous. They come ready and open to try new things and to meet new women and make new friends and try things together and have conversations and talk about their experiences and listen to other people's experiences. And it just creates this beautiful environment that is so special. I've never really experienced it anywhere else. And I think for a lot of women who attend, they feel the same way.
This energy, this joy that Shelma is describing is largely due to community and camaraderie, but it's also driven by comfort. There's an ease to being with other women, a dropping of the guard. Shelma ran a gender in the gym study through Flash Foxy to find out whether sexism plays a role in climbing gyms. She got over 1,500 responses, about 69% of which identified as female and around 30% of which identified as male. Unsurprisingly, she found that women were more likely to feel uncomfortable due to unwanted staring, unsolicited advice, and being unsure of what to do while working out. While the climbing community is largely thought of as inclusive, Shelma wasn't surprised. It's a reflection of our society at large. And Shelma wants to talk about this. She wants acknowledgement that the problem exists so that we can all move forward. She also wants to throw out the misconception that women can't be feminists and sexy.
We don't have to desexualize ourselves. I think there's these ideas that, you know, if you embrace kind of, you know, your I guess this is a really tricky question to kind of phrase correctly. I want to be mindful of the way that I phrase it. I think, you know, like embracing our bodies, like our physical bodies, to be quite blunt, we have these bodies that are curvy and we have boobs and we have beautiful legs and I think, you know, shoulders and skin, and that if you're showing those things, there's sometimes these arguments that you're asking for it, right? A prime example, I think, is argument about Sierra Blair Coyle. She's a professional female climber. She tends to climb in short shorts and a sports bra. That's her style. And there's been a lot of criticism, I think wrongful criticism, that if you're dressing like that, you're basically asking for harassment. That you want people to look at you. So how can you dress that way in a way that this person thinks means that you want them to look at you and then be offended when somebody comments about it? And I think that the argument with a lot of other things that I'm doing is that those physical characteristics of women, which are really beautiful, they don't mean that we need to be objectified. I think there are plenty of instances where a man's features are appreciated without being objectified. Someone can admire a man's good looks or his body, like, you know, that he has broad shoulders or whatever you think are these classic stereotypes of what is seen to be, let's say, quote, sexy on a man. I think that they can be appreciated often without that person being objectified. And it seems that that is a lot less likely to happen with women. So I think you can admire somebody and say that their body is beautiful and appreciate it without objectifying that person and treating them with the respect that they deserve.
Yeah, because what happens when someone's objectified is that they're not treated with respect, or they're just treated in a one-dimensional way, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a literal definition that you're treated as an object. I know that that's a really complex topic, and it's not quite easy to grasp or explain, but I think it's worth us having a conversation. And I definitely don't feel like I'm by no means coming into these conversations saying, hello, I have all the answers. I've come with all the solutions. I think what I'm really hoping to do is to start a conversation and point out the things that I'm noticing and hoping that that sparks a conversation where we can all work together to acknowledge the problems that exist and figure out solutions that work.
Shelma is intentional. She starts conversations because she wants to have them, not just because she feels like she should or because she can. This is similar to the climbing festival. In 2017, it sold out in 1 minute. Shalma could grow the event really quickly, but she's taking her time. She wants to do it right. She wants to treat the land right. She wants to give everyone the experience that she envisions.
I'm very intentional about the places that these things happen in and about the partners that I have. In Bishop, I work really closely with 15 to 18 small businesses and organizations in the town of Bishop. I work really closely with my land managers at the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Forest Service. I work with the Chamber of Commerce, and we spend about 70 to 75% of our budget in town locally, bringing money back into the community that we're working in. This year, we did a stewardship project with the Access Fund, who sent a stewardship team out, and the Friends of Inyo, which is the local advocacy stewardship nonprofit. We had 100 women out working on projects in 3 different locations. And then we also do a raffle fundraiser, and we raised $2,000 for the Access Fund around climbing, stewardship, and conservation. And they earmarked that money for projects in Bishop, ensuring that the money that we raise goes back into the places that we are doing the festivals. I think that for me, it's not just about the participants and their experience. We're really trying to grow together, not just as a community of women, but with these towns that climbing areas are in. This year, we did 8 clinics, and every clinic is led by a female guide and a female athlete, reinforcing that women can be the experts, that they can be the decision makers. And we do a panel, a women in climbing panel, with array of women, and we talk about all different types of topics, and hoping that in these women-only spaces that women feel comfortable and safe to ask or say anything they want to. And we bring on all women photographers and videographers.
You said that everyone can create changes in the places that you know, like that's the place to start. And hearing you talk about the ripple effect of the change in the place that you know, I mean, it's pretty incredible.
And I think that it's easy to feel overwhelmed. I think especially in this political climate that we find ourselves in, it just feels like there's a lot that needs to happen, and every task feels so big. And so where do you start? So my background, I wasn't a community organizer, but I worked with a lot of community organizers in New York City. So I worked for a community-based design nonprofit that provides technical assistance to community-based organizations. So we provide technical support around planning issues and community engagement for like tenant rights organizing groups and other groups that organize communities on the ground in like underrepresented areas and marginalized communities. And I think really what I'm doing with Flash Foxy in climbing is an extension of that. We're organizing in climbing and in the outdoor community. And from what I've learned is that you start in the things that you're familiar with, and that's where you grow from. Like, for example, there's somebody who lives on a street and has lived there forever, and there's a broken street light on their street, and they're like, this is terrible. And then they figure out how to go to a community board meeting to talk about it and petition that discretionary funds be used to fix the lights on that street. And they go and they talk in front of the community at the board and see it approved and see it come through and like see the street light fixed. And it's this really visceral, direct connection to how to be politically active and engaged in your community. While the thought of being engaged politically just feels like really big and like opaque, what does that mean? Or like, does that mean I have to go and be a politician? I think when you start with these smaller actions, first of all, you see like a concrete result in your own personal life, and that's really fulfilling. And it also just kind of shows you that there are smaller ways that you can make change. And if we all did that, there would be a really big impact.
Yeah, there does tend to be a disconnect between what we see going on, especially in the media, and what can actually be done. You've talked about how the climbing scene and women in climbing can be a microcosm for the way women are treated in culture generally. Do you have any idea, or have you thought about, with Outside focusing on women now and REI having the huge Force of Nature campaign and all of these grassroots organizations getting stronger, have you thought about like what is next for this movement?
Well, I can tell you what I hope is next for the movement. I mean, I hope it becomes a larger conversation. I think I mentioned in the film, I really strongly believe in intersectional feminism, that all of this is related with the challenges and struggles of all different types of marginalized communities, including women and the LGBTQ community and refugees and the people of color. Like, all of our movements are connected, and when we work together, it's more powerful. A lot of the challenges that we face and the reasons why we face them are very connected. A lot of the barriers could all be broken together because they're very similar, or the place that they come from is similar. And so I would really love to see that larger conversation happening. I think that of all the groups that I named, women tends to be the most accessible for a lot of folks, as you could see with the success of the Women's March in January. And so I think that it's really exciting that we as women can be here creating an opportunity in a space that will hopefully expand to address these larger, broader issues and bring more of these other issues of our allies into the conversation.
Want to be like Shalma? Leverage your unique skills in a place that you know. Start small. Incrementally grow, but don't shy away from a steep learning curve. Look beyond labels and boxes. Be yourself. Acknowledge your impact on your world and look outside of it every now and then. I know I want to be like Shalma. You can learn more about Flash Foxy at www.flashfoxy.com. and Flash Foxy and all the social media handles. We'll also be sharing these links on she-explores.com/podcast. Thanks to our sponsor, Aura Kayak. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, it'd be great if you left a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And even better is sharing the podcast with a friend or family member who you think might like it. Music is by Kai Engel, Little Glass Men, Chris Zabriskie, Lee Rosevere, and Mize. Till next week, bye.